You're listening to Awkward Oppy, a podcast from the Ugly Lab. Y'all, welcome back to another episode of Awkward Oppie. Thanks so much for tuning back in. I really wanted to just make space for some questions that have been on my mind a lot recently. You know, I often think about what it means to come back to your mother culture, what it means to come back to yourself. And most recently, I've been thinking about how you find where you belong when your existence is like an actual trapdoor between here and stories your mother tells you, these same stories that you can't pinpoint whether they're real or they were folklore passed down from her mother to her. I've just been thinking about this a lot and feeling frustrated, but also kind of excited having these conversations wherever I can. And this was just one of those opportunities. So I invited fellow social justice warrior Kyung Hee to the mic. I organized with her in Brooklyn. She is amazing, fierce, brutal force, really out here doing the damn thing for the people. And I cannot praise her enough. So I hope you glean as much from this conversation as I did. And truly thanks for your patience with my selfish inclination on this whole identity politicking thing. This is going to be a little girl gab session, I guess. So get you a cup of tea and let's get it. Stay tuned.
I'm Hyun Hee Shin. I'm a queer Korean anti-violence class straddler, and I'm so excited to be here.
For folks who don't know, Hyun Hee and I met through organizing, I want to say maybe like 2 years ago?
Something like that.
Right?
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah.
We were working on a local initiative. Literally bumped into you at the Brooklyn Museum.
Oh my God.
And I was like, yo, it was fake. The back of her head looks so familiar.
The back of your head looks ridiculous.
And I like tapped you on the shoulder and here we are.
I know.
Just for some context, we organize around the API community, mostly in New York City. And that's kind of the main reason why I wanted her on, because I feel like I have been able to, or fortunate enough to be engrossed in these very real conversations around like identity, politics, cultural consciousness, and like what the AAPI power movement looks like, and how we build. I feel like one of the big milestones in my own identity piece was about like how I come home to my culture. That's an ongoing conversation, right? And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about home, where you come from, what anchors you.
That's such an interesting and sometimes loaded question. I feel like people who, like me, grew up in fucked up family situations, like, home is such a funny question to answer and a funny, like, conversation to have. It's like, home, it depends on the day, right? Like, until 5 years ago, home for me was very, like, a very tense and sad thing that, like, I would just avoid talking about. Felt all of my filial responsibility to sort of visit like at least once a year and during the holidays, and then otherwise I just wouldn't be thinking about it, because that's why I escaped. Like that's why I came to the city. 5 years ago my father passed away, who was like a very scary and abusive person in my life. Since then, been coming back to the idea of home as a sacred and like place of sanctuary that I just did not think of for a while. And so, like, along with that came associations of, like, my mother culture. Because for a while, when the face of your heritage culture is an angry and scary face, mm-hmm. like, you don't really know how to relate to it. And so I spent a lot of time running away and just trying to disassociate myself because it was my way of healing at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I've been slowly, like, coming back to my home as a place that can be nurturing and nourishing. Now I have pretty positive associations of it. Like, when I think of home, I think of Amish country, Pennsylvania, and, you know, what my Korean people are doing out in the suburbs, finding each other and sort of, like, sticking by each other no matter how much we like or dislike each other. Community is all you have when you're surrounded by white faces.
There's a lot of that that resonates with me. With my family coming here in the early 90s out of a very poor, wartime country, mm-hmm. a lot of my childhood and how I understand home and love was through survival, right?
That's right, yeah.
And it's like, at the end of the day, if you're good, that's enough.
That's right.
I think it still frames a lot of my world and how I understand relationships and, like, making place for myself mm-hmm. and feeling validated in those places. Right. Because I feel like being raised through survival is so different from being raised through love. It's not to say that love isn't embedded in that relationship, right, but it's like a completely different language,
right.
You know? So I wonder, like, now that you're grown mm-hmm. and now that you kind of, like, are on your own and you have a little bit more agency around how you further cultivate that relationship. Like, you talked a lot about how, like, within these past 5 years, you've come back home, but the way you feel being in that space is a little bit more restorative, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I wonder if there were things that you had to battle within yourself, like demons that you had to conquer, acknowledge, before you were able to open yourself up in that way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What was that battle like?
Yeah.
Like,
at first, just having to overcome the body memory of anxiety and panic. The trauma takes its pound of flesh and it remembers, and the body remembers. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, going through the ritual of going to Penn Station, getting on that train to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and being like, okay, my body's freaking out right now because of PTSD, and I just have to remember that the source of my fear and pain is dead, like literally dead. I can go home and rebuild home and sanctuary and family. And that, like, this memory is like an old battle that I have to just let go of. I have to let it play out, like a meditation. Like, you just let them bubble up without any judgment, let them go. Mm-hmm. And so for a while, like a few years after, everything I ever associated with home and with my mother culture just sort of had to bubble up in a way where I had to freak out first and then let it go. Mm-hmm. Like, you had to tense a muscle so that you could relax and then feel better after.
Mm-hmm. So how is it anchor yourself here in, like, a different place? And, like, finding community. Because that's hard, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I know for me, finding the Asian community here, navigating that landscape was a little bit challenging for me.
Yeah.
It's so, like, ethnic-based here. And it's, like, there aren't a lot of Vietnamese people.
Right.
Like, it's a different game
out
here. So, how did you navigate that with this whole thing of your own, like, internal
struggle? Oh, totally. Yeah, like, I mean, for me, I mean, I have the privilege of being from one of the big three API ethnic groups, right? Like, Korean, Japanese, Chinese, I'm Korean. We just find each other everywhere, but especially in New York City. Yeah, the, like, API community out here, it was the first time where I felt like I could sort of be in community on my own terms. Because in rural Pennsylvania, or even just, like, the suburbs of Pennsylvania, the only way that you could be in community was by going to Christian church. Mm. You would be, like, that's how people gathered and found each other. Mm. And that was never my jam. And I stopped going to church after, like, the age of 11. But, you know, like, saying no to that meant that I wasn't connected to our community. But here, I didn't necessarily have to go to church. You know, like, there are a lot more spaces where there are Pan-Asian spaces, two Koreatowns. I didn't have to make the choice of either mm-hmm. I go see community or I don't. Mm-hmm. Because there are just a lot more people out here.
This might be just me projecting, but do you ever feel like you aren't Korean enough?
Oh my god, yeah. Yeah, I feel like that's a second gen, like, that's our bread and butter, right? Like, we don't feel quite enough in either space. We're too ethnic to be American and too American to be fully in our mother culture. you know, I'm like queer and like kind of squishy and hairy and loud and brown, and half of my head is shaved. And so whenever I go to Korea and visit my family, luckily they're charmed enough by me that like they
like
just
she look a little interesting.
That's right. Exactly. like literally every time I go over, they just be like, "You're just kind of different, aren't you?" And I'd be like, "Yeah." And, you know, like, I'd walk down the street and, people would turn their head and look at me. Mm. Or they'd do a double take, which I found fascinating and hilarious. Because I was drunk every moment of every day when I was in Korea. Like,
was that your first time going back to Korea?
My first time ever in Korea was when I was 3 or 4, and my mom was deported. There was something funny with her papers. Like, she was here undocumented. But, you know, like, marrying a citizen, my dad, and having 2 citizen children should have protected her.
Yeah.
It didn't. I don't remember why. So she was deported and we had to go back with her, and we lived
everybody?
Just me, my brother, and my mom. Yeah. My dad stayed here to see if he could do some sort of like low key organizing to get her back, which he did. Which, you know, in the early 90s was possible. Right. If she were deported today, forget about it. I mean, you know, luckily she got her green card. She got her paper. She's a citizen now. But, like, if she were deported today, like, we'd never see her again, you know, unless we moved with her. But so, yeah, when we were, like, little toddlers, we went to Korea. Then there was, like, a 20-year gap because we were just too poor to go because the tickets are so expensive. Right. Like, they're at least $1,000 per person. And we just did not have that kind of money. And so when my dad passed away, one of the things we did immediately after was book tickets to Korea, because we were like, we cannot wait for someone to die to visit our mother country.
Did you understand what it meant to be in Korea, like the nuances and the differences, and like, did you feel a type of way being there?
I mean, when I was first there, I was a toddler and I don't have a lot of memories, but the first time I went as an adult, I was about 21, and, you know, sort of like coming back to a long lost culture, you know, and like almost a long lost family. Because in the 20 years between, me and my brother didn't have a lot of contact with our family over there. I was just a child full of wonder. Like, what is this place? I'm surrounded by people who look like me. But I did notice that, like, there's certain things around their, like, gender norms and class stuff that I found a little bit more stringent than I was used to in the States. Like, just everything about me, you know, being like, they didn't know I was queer. I didn't really talk about it. And, you know, like, it was just one of those things where my mom was like, please don't. And I was like, fine, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so, but, you know, like, I'm still pretty, like, skirting a lot of gender norms. And so they were like, yeah, so you're, like, fat and, like, you have hairy legs. And, like, why is your hair so short? And, like, you're, like, really loud. Like, also, every time you laugh anywhere, people stop and look at you. Like, also, wow, you can, like, drink us under the table. Like, how is that even possible? Like, why do you drink your whiskey straight? You know, that kind of thing. Like, I was just so peculiar to them. They're used to sort of playing into the stereotype, like demure, quiet, long hair, shaved legs, wearing, you know, whatever, like, women wear, like, women are supposed to wear.
So what does it feel like to just be, like, out here and meet you?
Oh, it feels hilarious. It's, like, so much fun. Everyone is so befuddled by me, and I'm just like, I'm just out here being me. I don't give a shit, especially when I'm drunk. I'm just like, I don't give a shit, y'all. Like, I'm out here. I don't know. I feel like a unicorn whenever I'm out there.
Like, do you ever feel like you come back, like, to get yourself centered and, like, to get yourself in a good place? Do you feel like there are things, like, rituals or practices from home or, like, from your family that you come back to?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and there are ones that I'm slowly just learning, actually, for the first time. Mm. Like, rituals around the Lunar New Year. I started doing martial arts about a year ago, and it was my intention to find a Korean martial art because I wanted to do one in my heritage. Mm-hmm. So I started doing Hapkido a year ago, and so, like, a lot of the rituals around, like, bowing to people who are older and have, like, a higher rank than you and showing deference in that way, I've been coming back to. It feels really good to be engaging in a meditative practice that's from my culture. And seeing Korean everywhere. And seeing, like, people wearing a uniform that has Korean on it. Mm. And speaking Korean. Because they have to count in Korean.
Because then that's, like, more than just the practice. It's, right. Like, the environment and the culture and the climate. Right. Like, that's for you.
That's right. That's right. And that's why beautiful. I chose it. Yeah. Yeah. And it's been really helpful to come back to, you know.
How does it make you feel to, like, be able to nourish yourself, not just physically, but also, like, your energy, too?
It feels so good. Yeah, in fact, like, I injured my knee a few weeks ago, and so I haven't been able to go to training, and it's been tough because I miss my dojang. Like, it's so nourishing, you know, like, not only do I get to learn how to break someone's elbow and be a badass, you know, like, right, like, but I also get to come back to my mother culture in a way that, like, I had been, like, researching and thinking about really hard and intentionally came back to. And so it feels good. Like, something that I decided, like, I'm not going to wait for the perfect moment. I'm just gonna jump into it and see how it feels. And it's been such a, like, wonderful journey.
Are there current battles that you're dealing with?
Oh, yeah. Like, tell me about that. Like, all of the stuff about gender and class, I struggle with. And I think it's the main... Those are the two main factors and barriers that keep me from thinking about living there ever.
Why? Like, what is that battle?
I think that, like... It's hard to talk about your mother culture's different gender norms without saying that they're backwards or like that they're years behind the like Western places, because it feels shitty, you know, right? But I don't know how else to describe it. And then, like, the struggles that I have being stateside are that, you know, I'm from one of the big three ethnic groups, the ones that from the outside have a lot more privilege than even other, like, API ethnic groups in the States. And Korean Americans have a lot to contend with about our role in allowing API folks to be a lever against Black people in America, right? Like, and have ourselves enacted a lot of violence against Black folks. And so I struggle with that a lot and do whatever I can to mitigate and help correct it, you know, including the organizing that we do together. But I think that, like, especially as folks of color, Korean Americans have a reckoning for us because we benefit from the work of Black and brown labor, both categorically but also in a social justice sense. We benefit from their work for hundreds of years, and we benefit from being the model minority. And so because we're at the Venn diagram of both of those forces, we have so much to gain being folks of color, but also being not the scary ones, and so much harm that we have done and continue to do and have the potential to do if we don't reckon with that, you know? That's what's on my mind a lot when I think about my culture and like, you know, the monsters that I deal with.
What do you hope for? I know that's like a meaty question.
Whoa!
I love to put in a visioning piece when I can.
Yeah, I hope that we can, like, have the scales fall from our eyes, you know, and realize that we are in that difficult place in the Venn diagram and reject being used as a lever of anti-Blackness, you know, and being okay with it, that we really understand what liberatory solidarity means and looks like and feels like and tastes like and still choose it.
That's the key, that last part, and still choose it.
Yep. That's right. Yeah.
So I ask everyone on the podcast this question. Is there anything you want to say to the people? It doesn't have to be about what we've been talking about. It can be about anything.
Oh.
Yeah. No pressure.
Yeah, I think you mentioned healing earlier, and I think the one thing that I always say is that it's a nice reminder that healing isn't linear, right? Like, you don't get to, you know, it's not a video game or choose your own adventure. Like, you don't get to a point A to B to C to healed, right? Like, you don't ever finish. Yeah. And as, you know, like, if we think of it as linear, then when something shitty happens and we think that we're backtracking and it makes us feel worse, right? Like, trauma is sort of an old buddy that you have to walk with always, right? Like, it's That's always so gonna come true. Back at, That's, like, yeah, at true. Some point, you know, like, and that, like, if we have a bad PTSD day or a day when our trauma comes to bite us in the ass and we feel like really affected by it, and then we beat ourselves up for it by feeling affected by it, mm-hmm. that's not helping anybody, mm-hmm. right? And like, the truth is that this shit isn't linear. Time isn't linear, you know, like, I get right. real Buddhist it's about this shit fluid. Right, like,
no, it really is though, it,
right,
and like, it all connects to everything else.
That's right and it helps me, like, to beat myself up less. So just from, like, friends who are survivor leaders in this work, who I have had the immense privilege of learning from, one of the most important lessons I've learned from them is that healing isn't linear. Just to be gentle with yourself.
Mm, that's key.
Yeah.
Forgive yourself.
That's right.
Okay, so those were all the questions I had. Is there anything I haven't asked you that you want to say?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, this has been such a pleasure. Thanks Thank for you for having on. Me on.
Yeah, no, always trying to get the people on the mic.
Cool.
Thank you for tuning in to Awkward Oppie, a podcast from the ECRI Lab. Join us every month for stories about our youthful misfortunes, our radical ideas, and the occasional shade thrown or two. I hope you learned something new about yourself this week. Until then, DZ out. Hey boy.